Welcome to the Barbell Strikes Back. I'm James McDermott, and Josh Heller is joining me again for another Level 3 CrossFit Coach study. And today, we're fooling around with Fran. Josh, how do you feel about that?
Not great.
Does it make you a little nervous?
It does. I feel like we're poking the bear a little bit. I feel like we're poking the bear. Like Fran's been quiet, right? She hasn't been doing anything. And now we're just like, Fran, hey, what's going on? What are you up to? And she's like, you want to know what I'm up to? I'm going to destroy you.
January 1st, we did Fran at the gym. So she made her annual, you know, drop in. And typically we do it again, or she comes to visit somewhere around July, you know,
June, July time. Yep.
But I don't know now, because there's some things in this article that we're going to read that I would like to maybe program sooner rather than later.
We're
going to talk about them.
Respectfully disagree.
All right. Well, all right. So here, how about this? Before we get into Fran, we have to do a little bit of review, a little quiz, if you will, on the muted hip.
I'm as ready as I'm going to be.
All right. Well, first, let me ask you. You were loading at the Adirondack Regional Weightlifting Open this past weekend, the weightlifting meet we held at the gym. And we talked about this last time we met, that you're going to see that muted hip.
Yes.
Pop up quite a bit. What were your observations on just watching people's dip and drives, or even on the jerk, or even like their catch position on some power snatches? Did you see the muted hip manifest in sport for weightlifting?
Yeah. No question. Especially, and this is not surprising, as the weights got heavier. On, especially with some of the more advanced lifters early on, I didn't notice it. I was looking for it, and I was like, it looks pretty good. But as things got heavier, it certainly did rear its head. Obviously there was nothing egregious, but certainly visible. And again, I was in a uniquely positioned place, legitimately directly to the side of the lifter, to be able to watch the hip pretty well, and see that. So it definitely did, especially on some of those heavier jerks, that were there. The other thing I noticed, and I noticed this the first time I ever loaded, like a year and a half ago or so, big issue that I see a lot is, especially on the clean, people pull their arm way too early. I see arm bends real early, almost consistently.
There's a lot of that going on.
Assuming I do that too, I don't know, but probably. But that's the other thing that jumped out to me. That and the fact that my hands hurt, and my back hurt, and my foot hurt.
Everything hurts.
Yeah, everything hurts.
I'm not sure where where everybody is on that. There was a point where, no one wanted the arms to bend. You know, when the arms bend, the power ends, is the old saying from the CrossFit weightlifting course and Mike Bergner. But then, as the years went on, people that were against it started to warm up to it a little bit more. And it does happen. I think it's just one of those things that happens when when the weight gets heavy and you really want to make sure you're going to make this clean. Maybe there's a nerve component in competition, because I don't know how any of those people look when they're training versus when they're competing. And I do know that things change in competition. You might push a little more, or you might completely change your technique. Maybe a beautiful snatch technique where you catch it as low as possible, deep in a squat, but then in competition day, power snatches all day. You just completely change your form. It happens.
Yeah. Performance anxiety. It's a thing.
With the jerks, did you notice on the more egregious muted hips occurrences that those were the lifts that were missed more often, or were people making those lifts?
So people were making those lifts mostly, but they didn't look as there were some walking around, there was some rocking, there were a couple that we weren't they weren't picturesque, we'll put it that way. The ones that were, the strong ones, the ones that looked like, that's what it's supposed to look like, those were more the ones where the hips were not the issue. So, you know, even when they did make the lifts, and again, this is more for the heavier weights. Even when they did make the lifts, it was in doubt. There was some walking around, some trying to get into positions because their balance wasn't quite where it needed to be. Mm-hmm. So that I did notice that a little bit, that there was some traversing of the bar.
Cool. Shall I say. Hey, it's just a cool experience. You know, like you're loading, you're performing a task, but you could also, you know, turn your coach's eye on a little bit and practice seeing movement. All right, let's do this quiz.
All right.
Are you ready, Josh?
I'm ready.
Okay, question number one. These are all multiple choice for the most part. In the majority of trainees, some degree of hip dysfunction creates postures and mechanics that reduce blank and blank. Option A, speed and stability. B, stability and balance. C, power and speed. D, power and stability.
I'm going to say D, power and stability.
That is correct. That is correct. Side note, stability, the ability to resist change throughout, you know, joint systems. Very important. Question number two. Roughly how many years will it take to fully develop the hip's explosive capacity where there are no signs of muted hip function postures or tendencies?
3 to 5.
All right, which letter is it?
C.
Oh my God, you're right.
Yes.
Look at that.
Nailed it.
Woo! Oh, that's the luckiest guess ever. But yes, it is 3 to 5 years. I had other options like 1 to 3, 2 to 4, 2 to 6 to try to trip you up, but nope, you knew it. All right, good. Muted hip function is squatting where blank is delayed while blank is not. A, leg extension and hip extension. B, hip abduction and leg flexion. C, hip extension and hip adduction. And or D, hip extension and leg extension.
I'm going to say D.
That is correct. Muted hip function is squatting where hip extension is delayed while leg extension is not. Oop. Let me mute myself. There's a little bird. A little bird in the room. Question four. All of the following are consequences of muted hip function except. So this is an exception one. A, powerful hip extension. B, structurally disadvantaged spinal posture. C, pelvis abandoning the spine and chasing the legs. D, knee experiencing unsound shear force. Which one of those is not a consequence of muted hip function?
A.
That's correct. A, powerful hip extension. All those other things are a consequence.
Definitely consequences. Can I put a quick timeout real quick and just take care of something real fast?
Yes. Okay. So powerful hip extension is not a consequence of muted hip function. Now we'll move on to question.
Too bad I wish it was.
Yeah. That'd be quite the consequence. Question five. What is the only way to eliminate the effects of muted hip function? A, continue to max out on Metcons and barbell movements. B, deliberate and focused training and practice of demanding hip extension movements. C, utilizing exercises such as squat therapy. D, being relentless as a coach with verbal, visual, and tactile cues.
I'm going to go with, what was B again?
Deliberate and focused training and practice of demanding hip extension movements.
I'm going to go with that. I'm going to go with B.
That is it.
C is certainly helpful.
Yeah, so is D.
D is certainly helpful also. A, less helpful, but.
Yeah. I tried to create a question where yes, 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 but there is only one.
Yeah, that's answer. that's the which is the rightest of the right answers.
Yes, yes. Which I hate questions like that, but I think everybody does.
Because I'm answering in my head as you're going through it. I'm like, A, pfft, no, B. I'm like, yeah, there it is. C, oh no, that could be it too. And then D, like, well, I mean, it's not wrong.
Yeah. All right. Bonus question. What exercise offers the most opportunity to correct muted hip function?
Push press.
And at low, medium, or high rep schemes?
I'd say to correct it, I'd say high rep schemes.
Yep. Push presses done at high rep schemes offer the greatest opportunity to correct muted hip function. And that's it. Hey,
I nailed it that time.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, one of them you didn't even need to hear the whole question for. You just got it. Okay. Fooling Around with Fran, written by Greg Glassman, first published in the CrossFit Journal, issue 31, March 2005. Josh, do you remember your first time doing Fran?
I think so, but I wouldn't swear. Yeah, I think I do. It was very, very, it was very scaled.
Was it an on-ramp?
It was not an on-ramp. But it was, yeah, I do. I did, a lighter weight. I couldn't tell you what weight I did off the top of my head. And I did barbell pull-ups when we used to do the barbell on, in the rig for, you know, kind of seated pull-ups.
Okay. It's a good first time, Fran.
Yeah. And it was, honestly, it was scaled enough that it was not, I didn't feel like I wanted to die when I was done.
It didn't feel like maybe the workout that puts fear in you now.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. That was still to come.
Now, do you remember the first time you did Fran RX?
I do.
And that's a different story, right?
That was a very different story, yes.
How did it go? Do you remember your time?
Off the top of my head, I don't. I think it was somewhere in the realm of 7 or 8 minutes.
Okay.
And for me, it was the thrusters. I had to break them up. I may have done the 21 unbroken, maybe, probably not. The pull-ups, though, were easily the thing that took the majority of the time. My pull-ups at the time were not good. They were, I was, you know, kipping, but it was like, you know, I'd have to reset a kip every time or like jump down. And so it was very, I'll put it this way. If it wasn't Fran, I would not have been doing it RX. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
But it was, I want to do Fran RX. I've done it, you know, a number of times scaled and it's Fran and I want to try it. And so I did. And it was brutal.
Well, hey, 7 to 8 minutes, first time trying at RX, that's not that bad. I mean, typically we'd want to be done 10 minutes or less.
Yeah.
And definitely 7 minutes or less is another more aggressive goal if you're looking for that intended stimulus, because really Fran should be done less than 5 minutes. So see, it just keeps whittling down the time. But that, I think that's great for a first time, Fran. My first time was done alone at the Broome County YMCA in the weight room there. They didn't have bumper plates, so I had to put the plates up on those step aerobics risers to get it so it started at my shin when I went to pick it up every time instead of all the way down the floor, because the 25-pound plates are small. You know, they're smaller than your bumper plates. And the pull-up bar wasn't a straight pull-up bar. It was a curved pull-up bar on one of those fly machines.
Yeah.
And it had a gap in the middle where my head would pop through. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't even like a legit bar. Yeah. And I had to use a band. So I used a gigantic band around it. And it took me about 15 minutes. Way too long. And no one there to put me out of my own suffering. And I definitely felt that lung burn, that copper taste right away after the first set of pull-ups, and really could never recover. And so I'll add to that, there was no music either.
I just looked it up. My first time doing Fran, September 9th, 2014, 21:15.9, 35-pound empty barbell and ring rows.
Nice.
And then my first time doing RX Fran was May 18th of 2018, 7:38. So, yeah, it was right about the time.
Yeah, that's a good bump. I would say my second time was at my first CrossFit level one in 2012. And that's when they used to do Fran at the level one. They've since changed it. And that was a terrible thing.
So we did, at my L1, we did Burpee Fran, which was thrusters and burpees, which I got to be honest, I think I prefer regular Fran. Burpees and I don't get along very well. My burpees are slow. I have a long way to go down, a long way to go up, and didn't enjoy it. Did not enjoy
it. I think I would definitely prefer Burpee Fran over the pull-ups. The pull-ups, when your arms are jello after like a couple reps into the 15s, reaching back up to that pull-up bar was always the worst thing. But I ended up doing it with jumping pull-ups because that's how they scaled it at the level one for so many people. So it was essentially 21 thrusters, then 21 jumps up to the pull-up bar because my legs were on fire. I finished it in about 4.5 minutes, but that was so much extra leg work. I didn't feel anything in my upper body from the pull-ups, which I don't think jumping pull-ups are a good option.
For Burpee Fran, it was kind of the same. Burpee Fran was just a lot of legs. Just the jump at the top. It was just a lot. Yeah, it was a lot of legs. I'll tell you, the last time I did Fran, so I've been flirting with 5 minutes. I'm at about 5:14. And the last time I did Fran, I had a great plan and blew up in my face. And I remember 21 unbroken, outstanding. And then what I should have done was 7:77 on the pull-up bar, but the pull-ups felt great. They felt great. So instead I did 11 and then 10. And then I got
Fran set you off at ease.
She did.
Look how great you got great thrusters today, Josh.
And then I got back to the thrusters.
Just hang on to that pull-up bar.
And I for some reason in my head forgot that thrusters are also a forearm workout. And my forearms were just blowing up on me, and the thrusters killed me. Thrusters are usually where I go unbroken. That's usually where I'm better at. And I blew up my grip on the pull-up bar and didn't think that, things like overhead squats and thrusters are also a grip and forearm workout. And that came crashing down. And it was the round of nine. I had to break up the round of nine. I could not physically grip the bar. And so that was disappointing. No, I'm not going to lie. That was disappointing. So thanks, Fran.
You will have another chance.
Yes.
Because Fran
didn't do it New Year's. I wasn't here New Year's, so I did not do it New Year's.
And you didn't make it up either. I feel like that's some kind of bad luck. to go back with the burpees and the jumping pull-ups, it's more about feeling the intensity with those movements. So if you have someone who scales the pull-ups to burpees or do it like they do at the level one, you're definitely going to feel the intensity of Fran. Without the limiting factor of getting stuck on the pull-up bar and doing one pull-up at a time, which I've certainly done that before, and the intensity does like plummet all the way down. Yep. I mean, you'll still get Fran done, but you're not going to feel that metabolic effect of it. But burpees are a legit way to scale that workout. And then as much as I dislike them, jumping pull-ups as well will help you feel the burn. Now, diving into the article here, right on the first page, we've got Greg Amundsen looking like he's very happy doing thrusters. And I just noted right there in the second sentence, Fran gives the opportunity this affords for insights into human performance programming and ways of measuring and motivating progress is strong. That's just super cool that, he created this workout one day and little did he know, or maybe he had some idea at the time, that there'd be so much that you could draw from this workout, so much data, so much on performance and what human beings can do athletically. It's pretty cool.
It is. It makes me wonder if we did a deep dive into other workouts, would we be able to garner similar insights?
I think so.
I think so too. I think so too. Different insights, certainly, depending on what the workout is. But I think, you know, Fran certainly, you know, just because of the and he says it on the next page, you know, it basically complement, the two movements complement themselves because, you know, what is it? Each contains exactly what the other lacks. So it does a nice job of that. But I think you could do this with really any workout and still get information that would be helpful, information that would be enlightening.
Yeah. This just so happens to be quite possibly the most perfect workout. Like, I'm trying to think of what other workout is as sound and perfect for any measure of training, and
stop,
let alone the data that
Fran,
you bring.
Right? Stop trying to butter up Fran. She's not
I yeah, but I hope that
Fran,
she might hear this. She might listen to this podcast.
And I love you.
Yeah. I mean, Fran is just pretty much just the most perfect. It's beautiful. It's eloquent. It's simple. Look at how it is simple looking.
It is.
And it's the most simple workouts end up being the most brutal ones. Yet you see some kind of very long-winded, convoluted workout, and it's not that bad. It's not as bad as this.
Yeah, it definitely lulls you into a false sense of security, unless you know it, in which case you know better.
I did highlight what you mentioned with the complementary movements. Each exercise contains what the other one lacks. And, you know, I mean, that alone kind of helps make it a perfect workout.
Yep.
But then, yeah, they go on in the next part of the article here talking about work. And it says in the article, in practical terms, this means that we can measure work performed by multiplying an object's weight by how high we lift it. So when we're going to try to determine and get some data out of Fran, we can determine how high the bar is lifted in relation to your center mass when you're doing a thruster, and then how far your center mass moves when you're doing pull-ups. And we use the rep schemes, you know, the 45 thrusters and the 45 pull-ups, and then your time to complete all that work to figure this out with some pretty cool calculations. And we can go over the calculations on the next page, but I think it would be, if someone had time to do this for like multiple workouts, it would be cool to get all this data and plot it out.
No, absolutely. It is interesting. It's complicated. It's a little complicated. Like all the
physics
is what it is. It's exactly what it is. It's physics. And I do like how he, you know, fully admits that, look, when it comes to how far the bar moves, getting the bar up, we're kind of judging by the center of mass. We're doing the best we can. We're not physicists here. We're not, you know, it's not perfect, but again, it gives us a pretty good idea, and certainly enough of an idea to be able to, you know, glean the information we want and need from this, even if it's not, you know, exacting, which is, you know, unless you're in a lab, going to be very difficult to manage. But this is something that, like you said, if you had the time, we could do. Like, I could figure out, because again, you know, it used, you know, Greg Amundsen, it obviously talks about his height, his weight, you know, the length that the bar travels. You know, I think about, for me, I'm tall. I have long arms.
How tall are you?
6'1".
Okay. So you're an inch taller than Greg.
I'm an inch taller than Greg. I have a few pounds more than he is. But the way my body is, I have very long arms. My arms are longer than my height. And so does the bar move more for me? You know, do I have to pull myself up more? I don't know. I have no idea how long his arms are, but I'd be curious to see, to, you know, figure it out what it is for me. And, you know, obviously, you know, you think about, like, if you were to do this, or when Shy does this, you know, it's not a different workout, but it's a totally different calculation for somebody who's smaller and lighter. And yeah, what they get out of it versus what, you know, someone who's taller and heavier. And it does. And I appreciate
it. It mentions here, after playing with the numbers, we now believe that Fran selects for athletes lighter than 200 pounds.
Yeah. That's fact. And then athletes over 200 pounds, screw you guys.
So hold on. This is interesting though. There were many things I was reading in this article where I was like, yes. But then I was thinking, well, a lot of these guys that are at the CrossFit Games, they're heavy guys. Mm-hmm. Like most of them are around that 190 to 200 pound range. You know, I'm not sure how tall many of them are. I think what, like 5'10"?
I'd say less. You look at and I mean I don't know, but you look at most of the like Frazier was 5'7", maybe 5'8". Froning was right around that too. I mean they're not super tall. CrossFit is not great for tall people for the most part.
Yes,
there are certain things that it is better to be tall at, biking.
Well, rowing, Noah Olsen is only 5'7".
And is he really?
Yeah. That's what the Tier Athlete website says, his new sponsor. But he looks way bigger than that. So these guys are short and thick, you know. So mm-hmm. So that's gonna help them with the whole center mass issue on moving their distance, but they're still moving a ton of weight. It says does it say how much he weighs 190. So yeah, they all kind of weigh around ish that. Interesting, but they're not lighter guys like Chris Spieler, you know, who
in general they're not. No, they're short and stout.
Talking along the lines of like moving to center of mass, it says in the article that they simplified this what they were talking about earlier with the work and the distance the bar has to move by focusing more on a center of mass. But I do like the rationale behind it. Mm. Where it says in the case of the squat to overhead thrust movement, much of the leg isn't elevated the distance that the center mass travels, because you have your whole lower leg, so that's not being accounted for. And in the same the case of the pull-up, most of the arm isn't elevated as much as the center mass is, so our estimation of the work required to perform each pull-up will also be somewhat high. So it's just interesting how they, I think it makes sense the way they simplified it.
Yeah.
Or Greg simplified it.
And again, I think he puts it perfectly. It's less than ideal, but still offers insight.
Yeah.
Is there a way to make it exact? Absolutely. But is the extra information you're getting from that worthwhile? Probably not. You're getting what you need to get out of this. So that anyone could calculate their own, if they were curious, could calculate their own version of this. I mean, I could go to the gym today and, with someone's help, figure out exactly, based on my, physiological being, my measurements, figure out what I specifically do.
Which we should. I think that would be fun.
It would be. One thing I did find interesting is when he talked about the, this is a little bit farther on, but we know Fran maximally compresses to about 220 to 225. What's the fastest Fran time now? Because this was back in 2005.
It's below two minutes.
Yeah, it's sub 2 minutes. And what he said was, which is bananas, he goes 220 to 225 is the time required to complete Fran empty-handed with no load on the thruster and moving the arms to simulate a pull-up. And now we have athletes who are doing regular Fran faster than that. And that just goes to show, damn.
Well, speaking of Noah Olsen, his world record that I think he did last year at some point. It wasn't this year, last year. Oh, no, maybe it was it was October last year for the Wadapalooza online qualifier. 1 minute and 49 seconds. But there was controversy on that, I believe, that his reps weren't all looking that great. But still, people are finishing the work, maybe not the competition standards, finishing the work in less than 2 minutes.
And again, he's saying 220 to 225 with no weight at all.
Yep. And this is 2005. Yeah. So it's one of those things that's kind of the performance has risen so much that it's changed.
Yeah.
The range.
Oh, and I just found that fascinating because I read that and I was like, I don't think that's true at all anymore.
Yeah. We should totally figure out your measurements and have you do Fran, since you haven't done it yet this year.
This is just your way of making me do Fran.
And figure out what your your work is, your power output. It says here in the article on page 2, if we take our measures from CrossFit athlete Greg Amundsen, who is about 6 feet tall and weighs 200 pounds, we find that in the pull-up, his center of mass travels 24 inches, and in the thruster, it travels 26 inches, while the bar travels 47 inches. So he says the center of mass is between, for most athletes, the pubic bone and the navel, and in the frontal plane. So we'd be able to figure this out, you know, figuring out how far the bar travels, that's pretty easy, you know, from your shoulder to overhead.
Yep.
So I wonder if yours is more or less than 47 inches.
I don't know.
And then we would figure out your center mass and how far that moves, somewhere between your navel and your pubic bone. And then we can start to do the fancy calculations that are on page 3. And there's a little table there. This is very important for everybody to know. You should memorize force times distance equals work, and then be able to do the math here in this table. At first, it was a little confusing, because if you look at the table and you multiply 200 pounds by 24 inches, it gives you 4,800, but you have to divide that number by 12 inches.
Make about feet, yeah.
Yep, to get it to 400 feet. So that part of the work is kind of skipped, because the formula looks cooler this way.
That's true.
But at first, when I put it in the calculator, I'm like, what am I doing wrong? And then I looked through the article.
4,800 feet per pull-up.
Yep.
Yeah, it doesn't have the same ring to it.
No, it doesn't. So you got to divide by 12, and that will get you these numbers that you see for the 400 foot-pounds per pull-up, 433 foot-pounds per thruster for Greg, and 372 foot-pounds per thruster using a barbell only. We should measure this today, and we'll figure that out. And then to figure out your average power, you would just need to factor in your Fran time into this. So that's your work. So you would take those three numbers, and I know this is difficult to maybe visualize through like audio. So someone, if you look up the article linked in the show notes, it'll be a little more apparent. But you figure out the foot pounds, the work, for the pull-ups, for the thrusters, and the barbell distance.
Yeah, so you're going thruster distance and barbell distance.
Yep. And then you add them all up, and then you divide that by your Fran time, and that's your average power. So it's pretty cool.
Well, and then you have to multiply by 45, because it's 45 reps.
Yes, yep, that too. Yep.
Yeah.
Multiply by the work.
So we take that, add it together, multiply by 45 for reps. And what's interesting to me is, well, not interesting, but it's apparent, is that that number, you're forgetting about dividing by your time. That number is the, you know, the amount of power you're putting out, or the amount of work, sorry, that you're completing. It doesn't change. That does not change. Assuming your weight doesn't change, assuming that you don't get taller or whatnot. But every time you do Fran, unless your measurements have changed, that's it. And that will always be it. So the only difference is, you know, the time. Again, unless you significantly lose weight, and if you're doing this and you're younger and you're getting taller or whatnot, then obviously that would change a little bit. But aside from that, it's the same. You're doing the same amount of work, you know, regardless. Then the question is the intensity of it, the time of it.
Yeah, and that's what makes this such a reliable equation. You have this fixed data on you as a person, how far the barbell travels when you press it from your shoulder to overhead is not going to change. You know, it's pretty much fixed. Same thing with those other measurements. What's going to change is your performance on Fran as you get fitter, and then you can start to figure out what your power output is here as you improve.
Yeah.
This would be just a cool experiment to do at the gym with everybody. Like, all right, we're going to do Fran. You're going to come in. We're going to do the measurements, and we kind of just track this a little bit. I guess you really you don't really need to because you just track Fran itself, but it would just be cool to know this stuff. Just a cool nerd out there.
I think so.
And so I think little things like this, I feel help people appreciate CrossFit more because people say, all right, well, CrossFit's dumb. CrossFit doesn't know what it's talking about. There's the science is off, all this other stuff. But it's like, do you have data like this? Can you prove that your workout that you made works like this does? Because this gives you tangible evidence right here. And
so my question is, you can
use that data for good.
And this is something we could figure out. So say, and I mentioned Shy just because he's a lot smaller than I am. So Shy and I both do it. Now he can do it faster than I can, but I'm doing more work technically because I weigh a lot more and I'm moving the weight a lot more. So who has more, who has more average power? His workout that's a little bit faster than mine, or mine that has more work because I'm heavier and taller? I don't know the answer. Obviously, it's going to depend on the difference and whatnot. But you know, that's that because and I think that's something that needs to be kept in mind, especially as a coach. Fran is the same workout for everybody, but it's not. It's not. It's different for different people of different sizes who have to do different amounts of work. And I think that's something we don't think about, especially with something like Fran. If everybody's doing Fran RX because that's something they want to do, not everybody's doing the same amount of work. People are doing different amounts of work. And so someone who's bigger, who's heavier, who's taller is technically doing a slightly more difficult workout. And that's, I think that's just something and not change how you coach it, not change, but just something to keep in mind.
Yeah.
It's an interesting, way to look at it also.
I'm going to put my money on Shy.
Purple, but okay.
Just because of how, if there's a huge disparity in the time between you two, then he's doing
a huge disparity, sir. I just said he's a little faster.
Why? I don't know what Shy's Fran time is. Is it around 3 minutes or something?
No, it's sub five.
Okay.
Mine's 5:14 or 5:16. His is 4:50 or something like that. But he also has butterfly pull-ups. I don't, which makes it
so different. He's going to complete the work way faster.
And based upon, again, for those who go to the show notes can find the tables, based upon the tables, when you look at it and you look at when Greg did the workout at 95, he did it heavier at 115, he did it lighter at 75. As you would imagine, the 115 took longer, the 75 took less time. But when it came to work, there was more work at 115, less work at 75. And you look at what the difference was as far as the average power, and the average power was much, much higher, and the 75-pound weight. So even though he wasn't doing as much work at 75, so again, you check this out on the show notes; it'll be easier to see. But he did Fran three times. He did it at 95, did it at 115, and did it at 75. And obviously, at 115, there was a higher work rate or a higher work because of the more weight that was being lifted and moved. But on the other hand, it was slower, and that time seemed to make a bigger difference. I think it was said it was a 7% higher power, average power for Fran at 75%, and almost a 20% reduction in average power in the Fran at 115, which yeah. I thought was very interesting.
Yeah, it's cool to see all the different types, or just at least two other examples outside of the 95-65 weight.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah, no, and I think, like, if you think about Shy, his average power might be higher then.
It very well could be. And again, I don't know because I don't know what the differences are.
Because, like, if you think about, too, the work is still relative to the person. Right. Oh, like, so if that's your fixed work, okay, yes, you're bigger, but your built and your size help you to complete the work that is your size of being a bigger person. Just like hip for him, well, he's built and his muscles are strong enough to move just his own body.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the same thing. I'm like, okay, if we're both doing air squats, is it unfair for the taller person or the shorter person? Well, we're both completing the air squat relative to our size.
Yes, I agree with that, except when you make us go to the exact same target.
Oh, you mean with like a wall ball?
Yeah, when you make a squat to a wall ball, because I have to squat much lower to get to that wall ball than someone who may barely have to break parallel. So in general, I agree with what you're saying. If someone shorter is going below parallel and I'm just going below parallel, then yeah, it's the exact same thing. Even though technically, yes, I am moving a little bit more relative to my size. But if you're making us go to the exact same standard, the exact same, you know, not depth as in like below parallel, but actually to a standard target, that's when things change. It'd be the same thing as saying, and you can certainly say this, someone who's shorter is at a disadvantage for having to throw a wall ball to the same height that I have to throw a wall ball to. I don't have to throw a wall ball very far at all.
I would say that those are not comparable.
Okay, that's fair.
Squatting to the ball if you're a little taller versus throwing the target to a 10-foot target if you're a little shorter, I think are two wildly different things. Because the wall ball itself is more dynamic in that second example. It's in the air. You actually have to hit the target. Then it's got to come back down and you have to absorb the impact. And if it's traveling a little bit longer, it would be a more forceful impact.
Sure. But all I'm saying is that there are, depending on your body type, when there is a standard goal to set to, when there's a standard height to hit, when there's a standard depth to hit, it does put an advantage on one height versus the other. That was all I was saying. I'm not saying they are equal as far as it's as hard for me to do this as it is for someone to do that. All I'm saying is that I'm not saying it's not fair. I'm just saying it is certainly advantageous in certain situations to be X versus Y.
One, we should measure the wall ball thing just to see how much extra it actually is.
Well, two, first of all, we should measure how high we're actually throwing it, because I think we're throwing it over 10 feet anyways because the ground got lower when they
did
the floors.
Hey, extra fitness.
My 15-foot road climb is more than 15 feet.
Two.
I digress.
CrossFit isn't fair.
That's true.
Neither is life.
There it is.
So it is what it is. You got to use what you got and use it the best you can. And that is no different on Fran here. But yeah. just to highlight that.
Because Fran is a microcosm of life.
It is. She is. Very huge, very important though. Force times distance equals work. You have to know that.
Yep.
As a CrossFit coach, you might have to know it on a future quiz that's coming up and maybe do some calculations, all these things.
I can do that. As long as I get a pen and a paper to do, or maybe a, I mean, if I could get a calculator, that'd be great.
No, I think a calculator would be okay.
Because when we're doing the dividing by 12s and the times, that's going to be a little more complicated.
During the level one, I think they allowed a calculator, right?
I think they did, yeah. Yeah, you couldn't use your phone, but you could use a calculator.
All right, cool, yeah.
I think.
Then it's allowed.
Not a rival.
Speaking along the lines of this lighter Fran, heavier Fran, I highlighted this paragraph here on page 4. What did it do to Greg's average power to complete this, quote, anorexic Fran? It brought the average power up from 315 foot-pounds per second to 338 foot-pounds per second. This is an increase in average power from the standard Fran of about 7%. So it makes you think too, okay, let's say we have a couple guys that are your size and you're going to go RX because you've got the experience and you're going to get this certain average power output because of your experience and how you've grown and become fitter and stronger through Fran and doing other CrossFit exercises. But you have another person who is new, but they might be strong enough to do a 95-pound thruster and they want to do an RX, but they're not ready for this kind of intensity. And this shows you how if you scale, you bring the weight down, then they'll still have a high power output, even if the weight is light.
Well, and I think that's a good point. Like, you know, in my head, I'm like, well, if I went lighter on Fran, it'd be easier. Not necessarily. It shouldn't be. It shouldn't be. And technically, it should be not necessarily harder, but more. You're doing more. It's requiring more, which is kind of you know, on the surface, a bit counterintuitive, like, oh, I'm only doing Fran at 75 instead of 95. It's going to be a lot easier. It shouldn't be. It shouldn't be, because you should be going faster. You should be, you know,
should be going next unbroken.
Yeah. So it should be. Now, again, like when I was doing a 35 pound barbell, different story because of where I was physically. But if today.
But hold on, your fitness, though. You know, you still didn't have the fitness.
Oh, absolutely.
For Fran, anyway, anyhow, it hits you.
Oh, no question. But today, if I were to do Fran at 75, it should still hit just as hard as Fran at 95. Different, a little bit different, but it should hit just as hard, I would think.
You could probably do, which, hey, add this to the list of things we should try, your first iteration of Fran, 35 pound barbell and ring rows, you could probably do that in sub 2 minutes.
Yeah, I'd like to think so.
And that would be interesting to see how that felt. It wouldn't probably floor you the way a heavier weight one would, but you'd probably feel that burn, and it'd just be a different experience. You'd be like, whoa, that's what it, because it's still 90 reps done as fast as possible, in less than 2 minutes. That's a lot of work done in that time, especially when you factor out this the foot pounds and how far everything is moving.
It'd still be unpleasant any way you look at it. Any iteration of Fran, it's just going to be slightly unpleasant.
Yeah, it'd be a cool experiment. It's like, have you moved that amount of foot pounds? You've moved that amount of foot pounds in 7 minutes, 5 minutes. Have you ever just felt what it's like to move it in less than 2 minutes?
I doubt it. I'm gonna have to try that. That's interesting. I'll have to give that a shot.
Yeah, just as an experiment. Let's do all of this on Sunday at Coach's Development.
I'm gonna do my first iteration of Fran. We're gonna do regular Fran. We're going to do 115. We're gonna do well. And what did they do at what was it last year? They did. I don't know if it was the quarterfinals. I don't remember what it was. No, maybe it was a couple years ago where they did. What kind of Fran was it? 135 and
chest to bars.
What the heck do they call it? Friendly Fran. I don't know why they call it that, but friendly Fran. And I could do it, but again, if I were to do that, doing regular Fran would hit me way harder.
So let's based on what we know, if you were to do 135 and chest bar pull ups, or even 135 and regular pull ups, what's going to happen to your average power output?
It's going to plummet, because my time is going to balloon.
Just like Greg's 115.
Yeah. But so much worse.
His didn't really plummet no, that far.
It dropped, but it didn't plummet. Mine would plummet. Which is interesting, because when you saw them do that 135 in the chest to bars, it was less than what they normally do, but it was still faster than what I do for regular Fran, which is disconcerting.
Yeah. So to go back to scaling, it just shows you sometimes people are concerned about the weight. Like, oh, if I don't do the heavier weight, or if I don't go heavy enough, I'm not going to get a good and effective workout. Well, if you do it at 65 pounds and you do it all unbroken and you get it done in 3 to 4 minutes, this is going to be an effective workout. And we have numbers here that we can base that on too. Well, if you went too heavy and you're dropping it, or also over strategizing Fran, and you're going to do, I'm going to do 777 on the thrusters, 777 on the pull-ups, then 555, 333, we've all done that before.
Yep.
And it does not feel the same
as the other ways. That, as a coach, it's important to know that, because people with Fran, because of what she is and who she is, it's become such a benchmark workout that, like for me, like, should I have done the first time I did Fran RX, even though I was sub 8, so I think it was fine. But would I have gotten a better workout not doing it RX because of probably my pull-ups, I assume. Would I have gotten a better workout scaling it? Probably. But it's become, such a mythical workout now that, people will make that decision to, okay, I'm going to go for it here. And so there has to be kind of this give and take of, I get it. It's,
time and a place for everything.
Yeah, exactly. Do I wear lifters when I do Fran? Yeah, I do. Would I normally for 95 pound thrusters? No, absolutely not.
Are you trying to get an advantage over Fran?
Yes. Every advantage I can get.
That doesn't sound fair,
every
though.
Every advantage I can get. I need it. But again, you know, it's like we talk about with certain workouts, you know, there's a place for it, and Fran has become one of those. And so, you know, on the one hand, we don't want to take that away from people, because doing Fran RX is a thing. It's a moment. And so, you know, if someone's close, I don't want to steal that from them. But at the same time,
but you can't do it every time. That's exactly the thing. So you can't have it be that just because Fran is this, you know, this type of workout with this reputation, that it's an every time thing. And you have someone beating their head against the wall, be like, okay, this time we're going to do it. Let's actually do 777. You're going to experience this in a whole different way. Next time we'll try something else. But then if it crashes and burns, it doesn't mean the next time we like do it, we're going to try again. Then it crashes and burns. Then the next time you do it, we're going to try it again. And it's just, you know, now you're not going to be improving on the test because you keep taking too hard of an exam. How about 90 pounds? How about 85 pounds? And have you done those prerequisites? Some people end up taking big jumps.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what I did before. I think I went from 75 probably to 95 would be my guess. But I also know that I went 95 and scaled the pull-ups before I ever did, you know, anything.
I like that option better.
Yeah.
As well, as opposed to doing the whole Fran first time after coming up from, like, let's say 75 and ring rows. Hey, let's do 95 and ring rows and see how that feels.
Yeah.
Or let's do 21.59 on the thrusters, 9.63 on the pull-ups. Yeah. Which a lot of people scoff at that. They're like, only that many pull-ups? Well, I'm not doing any pull-ups. And it's like, no, this is still going to be like a 3 to 4 minute workout, and you're going to start to touch the hot flame.
Yeah, if you're doing strict pull-ups at that point, if you don't have great pull-ups, you're probably doing some kind of strict pull-ups. Then that's enough. That's enough.
Yes, you just brought up a good point. If you don't have efficient kipping pull-ups, we should bump down the number of the pull-ups or do something else, because it's just not going to work. You know, like that's going to be the biggest limiting factor over the barbell. It's going to be the pull-ups. And you definitely don't want, if you're doing Fran one pull up at a time, come on, what are we doing?
Yeah. And again, if you're doing Fran, strict pull up Fran, unless your strict pull ups are, I mean, strong.
Yeah.
That sounds terrible, by the way.
Now we've made the workout harder.
Miserable. I couldn't even imagine doing strict pull ups on Fran. Oh my God.
There's a version called Franosaurus Rex. it's weighted pull-ups.
Oh, good Lord.
I can't remember what the barbell weight was. I'm going to Google it right now. We've done it before. But there's so many variations. Dumbbell Fran, I've definitely done that.
I don't know if I've done dumbbell Fran. I've done versions of that. I don't know if I've ever done a full dumbbell Fran. I also don't think I want to.
It is a whole nother experience, just because the thruster, I feel, exposes you in a different way when you use the dumbbell, because all of a sudden you're like, why can't I press with my left arm anymore?
Well, what we did, so one of the last times I did Fran was we did prior to doing Fran, we did one rep max heavy dumbbell thrusters.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that was exciting. I enjoyed that very much.
We should do that again. Yeah, we haven't done some
sure.
Of that.
Yeah.
That stuff right. In a little bit. Really? So to round out the article, there are more variations that are presented. And one of them is a one round Fran of 45 thrusters right into 45 pull-ups. And Greg Glassman does offer ways to tackle that, where you could do three sets of 15 thrusters followed by three sets of 15 pull-ups. So you could do the 3x15 approach, 5x9, 9x5. So breaking it up different ways there, kind of like he broke up Diane all the way back on that benchmarks workout article we read. But I am interested in this one round of 45 and 45. I feel like today people would do that unbroken. Like I highlighted later on, he said, our expectation is that generally times for the different splits would rank quickest to slowest. The quickest being 9x5, then 5x9, then 3x15, and then the slowest being 1x15. But I kind of feel like by today's standards, that's not the case. Like if you have if no Alston's doing this, he's going to do 45 unbroken thrusters, 45 unbroken pull-ups. Yeah. So I'm talking for like the top level athletes. Yeah.
Versus me, I couldn't do 45 unbroken thrusters. I certainly couldn't do 45 unbroken pull-ups. And the transitions between the two and one from the other are crucial for me. And so I think what he said is true for most of us. But as you said, the top athletes who can string together that 45, I mean, as long as they can keep their pace up, there's no transition time. I mean, well, there's one transition, but so that could be the fastest way to do it, as opposed to the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 transitions that happen in a normal frame.
And you know, as I think about it now, this article is written in 2005, right?
Yes.
The games weren't a thing yet. So he's got to be talking about just athletes, like everybody, you know.
Well, and even the first year of the games, I remember when we were doing a bunch of qualifier workouts or whatnot or old workouts, and that happened in the first, like we have athletes that would have in the first games, just regular athletes at our gym in the first games would have placed in certain, you know, workouts, which is crazy because I love all our athletes, but that's not the case now anymore. So it was a very different animal back. They were normal people, like normal working regular people who were working out on the side. This was not a profession. It is now a profession and a lucrative profession.
Side note, Franosaurus Rex, 15-12-9, thrusters at 135.95, weighted pull-ups at 45.20.
Oof. Ugh. No. Well, first of all, I can't do any weighted pull-ups at 45. So let's start there. So that's going to be problematic in and of itself.
But this would be an opportunity to do strict pull-ups instead, or a lighter weight.
Yeah. And I'm assuming they would have, you know, the weight, the belt and the chain and the
probably dumbbell. Probably just a dumbbell between the legs.
Oh,
that's typically how CrossFit does it.
45 pounder between the legs, though. That's, you're holding on to that thing tight. But yeah, there's not really much room for kipping at that point. I can see why they call it Franosaurus Rex, because you're gonna walk around with the hand with
the implications on your grip from that weighted pull-up that's done semi-strict, and then also think about the muscles in your legs when you're squeezing the dumbbell with your thigh muscles. I did highlight, You were just talking about the transitions, and you know he notes here in the article the 9x5 split. If we're trying to do 45 thrusters and 45 pull-ups, comes out to be 8 breaks rather than just one. And that's just good to know in any workout, right?
Yeah.
When you're approaching a workout and you see a weight on the bar, how many times are you going to have to break this up? Because that is going to affect your time. It's going to affect a lot of things.
Yep.
And that's why we give people ranges in classes. Hey, when you do the pull-ups today, 1 to 3 sets, preferably closer to one. But if we have to, 3. If it's up at 5 sets, we might be in trouble now. You know, we might be not only fatiguing too much on the pull-ups, but our intensity is going to go down. we're going to slow way down in the workout.
Yeah, no, that's good. I think I love the way he finishes it. Improving Greg's brand is not our goal. Like he's talking about how to improve, you know, Fran, how to get a better Fran, a faster Fran. That's not the goal of CrossFit.
Yep.
The goal of CrossFit is not to get the best Fran. That's kind of it's nice. It feels good, but that's not the point. Like that's not the point of what we're doing here. We're not talking about this so we can get faster Fran. Faster Fran, better Fran is the result of better fitness and vice versa.
And health.
Yeah. And so, you know, invariably, like you said, you know, if I do the Fran that I did the first time I ever did it, you know, I could probably beat that by 3 to 4 minutes. That's
It'd great. Be a warm up for Fran.
It would be. And that's great, not because it's faster, but because it is a sign, a harbinger of the fact that I'm in, you know, better shape now. I'm more fit now. I'm healthier now. And so that's, I think, the important thing. We often, you know, especially with these types of workouts, with these, you know, benchmark workouts, we get a little fascinated by them. And we, you know, and getting a better Fran is great and it's good and it's a goal and it should be celebrated, but it's not really the point. Like that's not the point.
It only comes up twice a year, maybe once.
So, I mean, that's not the point. It's nice, like I said, and it's certainly something to shoot for, but it's not the point. And I think having a bit of self-awareness about that is important. Your Fran does not define you.
I don't think we have anybody that has workouts affect them like that, you know, anymore.
No. And here's the truth.
This is, I think, with
any workout, especially as you're getting towards the margins of being, you know, good to really, really good, the margins are razor thin. You know, when you're looking at a guy like Teach, he can get Fran done in about 3 minutes.
Somewhere's around there. Yeah.
And so, you know, if he's having just an off day, just not feeling great that day, that's enough to not get a PR, even if he's better. You know, for someone like me, when I went from my first RX Fran to my next RX Fran a year later, it didn't really matter what kind of day I was having. I'm still better enough that I'm going to get a better score on that. It's just going to happen, assuming I don't, you know, hurt myself or anything. But as you get closer to the margins, you know, as you get closer to those best scores, it's tiny little things. And so, yeah, you can be frustrated.
Well, that's why you see people with the barbell pretty much underneath the pull-up bar.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to decrease the distance they have to go back and forth.
And there's such thin margins, but because there's such thin margins, if you don't get it, it doesn't mean anything, right? You get to a point like when he's at a point getting, you know, 220, when Noah Olsen gets 148 or whatever the heck he got, well, say that, you know, the next time he does it, he gets 150. Does that mean he's not in as good a shape as he was? No, it doesn't mean that at all. I mean, it could, but.
Wait, are you kind of saying Fran isn't important?
That's not at all what I'm saying.
I'm going to tell Fran
is wonderful. And Fran is great and good, but Fran is a tool. Well, that sounded harsh.
Yeah,
Fran,
wow.
Fran is a tool, in more ways than one. Fran
just
is a
one
tool
workout
to help us, you know, see. It's a tool amongst others, and I think it's a great tool. But I do think there runs the risk of putting too much stock into it.
Yeah.
Because
she's just one sister in a family of workouts. You've got Diane, Jackie, Cindy, all who have different focuses and different effects on your health and fitness.
And here's the thing. If you were to do all the benchmark workouts, right? You and I were going to do all of them together. And I have a better Fran than you do. And you have a better everything else than I do. Every other one of those benchmark workouts is better.
I'll trade you. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
But again, I mean, we kind of in our heads, you know, deify Fran to be, you know, something more than I think she is. She's wonderful exactly the way she is. And this is no fault of her own.
She was created that way.
She does not claim to be anything she is not. We, however, can oftentimes give her that, and I'm as guilty as anyone. When we have Fran on there, do you not think for a second that I'm not super duper nervous? Not because of the way I'm going to feel when it's done, partially, but because I'm nervous about getting a better time. Because if I don't, I'm going to feel like a failure, and I'm going to feel like I'm not making the progress that I want to be making. And
I'm only nervous about the pain.
I mean, you,
and, not so much the time, just the pain. That's fair. No other workout hurts like Fran.
So the last time I did it, right? The last time I did Fran, I didn't get a better score because I screwed up on the pull-up bar. Does that mean I'm not in as good a shape? No, it means I screwed myself up. I bit off more than I can chew. But it doesn't mean I'm not in as good a shape. It doesn't mean that, you know, I'm failing. Although when I was done, did I feel like a failure? Yeah, I did. I felt like
a failure. Doesn't mean you're a bad person.
I knew once I picked up that barbell the second time, I already knew it was over. I was like, there's no chance I'm going to do it. Workout's over. This isn't going to happen. And that is a terrible feeling, by the way. So I still have more than half the workout to do.
This all, I mean, we've talked a lot about the physical aspects of Fran, and we are now into the psychological aspects of Fran. And it's a workout where, like you just said, right in the middle of it, you can feel your victory slipping away.
Yep.
And then as a bonus, you still get to finish it. Although I have seen people quit and throw the barbell down or throw their grips down on the floor and walk away because they realized that they lost and they weren't going to be able to make up that ground again.
I kind of think of, is there anything worse than being, you know, an Olympic figure skater on the biggest stage and 10 seconds into your routine, you're down. You know it's over.
Yeah.
You still have to get up and finish in front of millions of people and judges, knowing full well that your dream, everything you've been working for your entire life, decades, gone.
And you got to smile while you do it.
You got to smile and you got to finish it up. And then you got to wave at everybody and like, but inside you're dead. Inside you have died. That has to be the worst. In most sports,
Fran offers everybody that feeling.
Yeah. In most Olympic sports, right? If I screw up, if I'm doing, I don't know, skiing and I fall, I'm done. It's over. All right. Well, I tried, you know, I failed. That stinks. But no. You have to get up there, sweetie, figure it out and finish it up. Like, nah, I'd skate right off. I'd be like, well, thanks, guys.
Yeah, that's how I feel about any of the other benchmark workouts, really. You know, Cindy's happening. Oh, man, all right, I'm not going to get an extra round or rep or whatever it is. But on Fran, I think it's just the way it feels adds that insult to injury.
Yeah.
When you realize it's happening, plus you were panicking before, you start panicking in the middle of the workout, clamoring to get up to the pull-up bar, and it just all adds up.
Yep.
But it can be used, like you said, a tool to overcome these mental, roadblocks and become a more hardened athlete and a smarter athlete.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I mean,
Fran is the best teacher.
You learn from him. You learn from Fran. What is it? Fran, improving Greg's Fran is not our goal, however, and neither is analysis, but analysis, and it can be self-analysis, not just what we did, but self-analysis, looking back on a workout. Analysis opens our minds and, more importantly, opens our eyes.
Yep.
Woo!
Greg Glassman did end this article with some fire. I highlighted that whole paragraph there, starting with but analysis. Yep. I like the next couple sentences. He continues, "We cannot yet derive fundamental principles more valuable than measure, think, and experiment." And that's what we're doing with Fran, and that's what we do in the gym. The better part of measurement may lie in knowing what you are doing so that we can do something different. I really like that. Yeah. Like if you don't know, you don't know, right?
Yeah.
So just by knowing and doing some calculations or just thinking about it, now you can actually think about doing something else.
Yeah. And that's growth. And isn't that true of life? Isn't that true of life?
Yeah. Fran equals growth.
Wow, we're getting deep here. We're getting deep.
Okay. Well, I think that concludes.
Yes.
Fooling around with Fran. Josh, any closing thoughts on the workout
itself. All I'll say is that love Fran, and hopefully you don't see you for a while.
Cool. My closing thoughts, 45 and 45.
Good Fran today.
Yeah, let's, I just changed the workout. 45 and 45, and I do think it would be interesting to for you to redo your first one.
Yeah.
Just like on a Saturday, be like, just bust out the rings, bust out a 35-pound bar.
And like you said, I can do that, and then whether I do Fran or not after, I could do that and still
do something else.
Something else.
Yeah. And it's only good. I think 2 minutes or less. I think you'll get that done surprisingly fast.
Mm-hmm. I'll try that.
And we should also figure out your measurements and see what your calculations and power output and everything come out to be.
Not as good as Greg Emundsen's.
Well, let's see if it rains true, at least on if your overhead reach with your arms is more than his.
I'm curious.
Which means you're at a disadvantage compared to Greg Emundsen.
Yeah. Well, I'm at many disadvantages compared to Greg Emundsen, but
the original fire breather that, you know, Greg Emundsen.
Many, many disadvantages. But we'll say that's one.
Awesome. Well, Josh, I already know you still don't have Instagram.
True.
But you do have a website where if anyone needs to get in contact with you, they can go there and email you and stuff, right?
Yeah, it's josh-heller.com. I can listen to any of my material, any of my voiceover work, any of my broadcast work. There's some old broadcast video on there, too. If you want to see what I look like pre-beard, it's on there.
Pre-Fran. And,
what's that?
Is it pre-Fran?
Oh, it's well pre-Fran, yeah. This is before I moved to Albany.
Oh, wow.
This is 12 for many years ago. Many years ago. If anyone needs any voiceover work or anything, let me know.
Cool. You can follow our gym, Albany CrossFit, on Instagram. Just look for at Albany CrossFit. You can follow me, James A. McDermott, on Instagram as well. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Fran, for all that you give us. We love you, Fran. And Josh, thank you for coming on.
Always a pleasure.